You're listening to the Doug Haldeman Show on FM News Talk 97.1.
Welcome back. I'm your host, Doug Haldeman. I'm here with my co-host, Tammy Haldeman. Welcome back, Tammy.
I feel smarter.
I feel a little smarter, too. I feel like I know how to be better represented. I want to welcome back to the air. We have Stephen Schultz from Schultz & Myers Law Firm. Welcome back, Stephen.
Thank you, Doug.
So as a personal injury attorney, let's jump right into this. We just talked about subrogation. Now let's talk about medical malpractice. We hear about it all the time where somebody thinks they've been wronged by somebody in the hospital. The doctor didn't give good care. The doctor, you know, whatever it is, misdiagnosed him.
He looked at me funny.
Right. They just didn't. Yeah, they just didn't seem to care. They didn't put a lot of good bedside manner into it. What are the most common things you see with medical malpractice? You guys get a lot of calls on this, right?
We do. We get a ton of calls on it. And it really, most of the calls, unfortunately, are just dissatisfied patients. They're dissatisfied with the patient care they've been provided. And that doesn't equate to malpractice, per se. You know, the doctor has to actually deviate from the standard of care, meaning he has got to do something that normal doctors in his profession would not have done.
Right, it would be fully expected for him to figure out.
Correct. That's exactly right. So in order to determine whether you have a malpractice case, we as a law firm have to review the case, but not only lawyers have to review it, but we actually have to hire a physician in the field that you are complaining the treatment was provided incorrectly. We have to hire a physician in that field. So, for example, if you're claiming a back surgery was done incorrectly, you have to hire a back surgeon to review your case and determine whether or not, in that physician's opinion, your doctor acted negligently.
I would have to think there's some professional courtesy there where the doctor's not going to want to say that another doctor was negligent unless they're really sure.
Exactly. If there's a close call, they're going to defer to no negligence. I mean, there's safeguards in place in these cases to really limit the amount of cases that make it to the courts. So you have to have a pretty clear-cut negligence case to make a malpractice claim.
So if you want to have a doctor review something like that, do you have to pay them? I'm assuming you have to pay them a fee to be able to review the case.
Yes. I mean, you know, you see how much your doctor is charged to look at you for an hour, right?
Well,
you can think about how much I have to pay them to review a case that may take them 20 hours to review.
So how many cases get reviewed versus how many do they, like out of the ones they review, how many do they say are actually negligent?
I would say 5% or less.
Okay, so maybe 1 out of 20 they would consider to be negligent.
Correct. You know, and the problem is medicine is such a complex field. What the traditional patient may think is clear malpractice may not be. You know, certain surgeries may have known complications, and when those known complications arise, a patient may think, well, I had this surgery and here was the complication and I want to sue for it. Well, you can't because you signed informed consent and you know there was known complications that arise from that surgery. So it just, it's very limited in the amount of cases that actually make it to the court.
Well, give us some examples of something that would be considered malpractice.
Okay, so a common thing is a failure to diagnose or a misdiagnosis. That is where you go into the ER and they fail to diagnose you with an injury that ends up causing you major problems when you leave the hospital. And the most common failure to diagnose that turns into a case is heart attack cases. You know, you go to the hospital with shortness of breath and they say, well, it's just indigestion, go home, instead of running an EKG.
Right.
And then you go home and you or someone you love has a heart attack and they, God forbid, pass away. So in that situation, we have to have a doctor review it, see what the standard of care was and if that was breached. And if it was, proceed with a lawsuit.
Well, and that's a good example because I've had several friends that were having anxiety attacks and they didn't know it was anxiety attacks. They thought they were having heart attacks and they go to the hospital swearing they're having heart attacks. And they send them home because they're okay. They're not having a heart attack. They're just having an anxiety attack. Their heart's pounded out of their chest, and they just have too much on their mind. And maybe they need to go home and meditate, but they don't need the ER.
Yeah, and, you know, that's why I always recommend, you know, research the hospital before you go to it. You know, you go to these big hospitals like Barnes and St. John's. They see this a lot. And so, you know, they're more likely than not going to do the right thing and get you properly diagnosed and run the correct testing. But, you know, these ERs are clogged up.
Right. In case you just joined us, you're listening to the Doug Haldeman Show on FM News Talk 97.1. We're speaking with Stephen Schultz from Schultz & Myers Law Firm about malpractice lawsuits and what qualifies as malpractice and what doesn't. So how often does somebody go to the ER and based on the insurance they have will determine if those tests are even covered, and they may not choose to run certain tests because they're either not insured or, you know, underinsured.
Well, they better not do that, because then they open themselves up to more than just medical malpractice. But, you know, they can't turn you away for not having health insurance. They've got to run the right tests and figure out how to bill you later. If you're coming in there with shortness of breath and you think you have the symptoms that you're exhibiting symptoms of a potential heart attack, they've got to run the right tests regardless of whether or not you have Blue Cross or what type of insurance you have.
Got it.
Okay, so let's go a little further into specifics about what it takes to actually bring one of these cases to court, because you said it's pretty difficult.
It is, and it's limited too, and that's an important thing to keep in mind. If you suspect there was malpractice in your care, then you've got to reach out to an attorney to have him review it, because the statute of limitations in Missouri for medical malpractice is 2 years. Now, if it involves a fatality, it goes to 3 years. But that's short, because car wrecks are 5 years. They're longer. So malpractice cases are short statute of limitations. And if I'm reviewing a case, it will take me every bit of 5 months to have a doctor review the file and make a determination of whether or not your case can even proceed to the court system.
And you have to do all that review before you could even file a case.
You have to. When you file a medical malpractice lawsuit, it has to be accompanied with an affidavit, which is a sworn document from the doctor that reviewed the case, and that affidavit has to attest that there is negligence there in the doctor's opinion. So that all takes a lot of time to coordinate. So it's a lengthy process.
And when it comes to limits, did I hear that there are certain limits on malpractice suits?
There were, but those have been stricken down. In 2005, the Missouri legislature put into effect a cap on non-economic damages, and that is a fancy term for pain and suffering. So in a medical malpractice pain and suffering claim, you were limited to $350,000 for recovery for pain and suffering in 2005. Well, in 2012, the Missouri Supreme Court struck down that cap. So as of today in Missouri, there is no cap on pain and suffering. Now, a word of caution, the legislature is being proposed with all kinds of new caps and other ways to limit how much you can recover in a medical malpractice claim. And it almost passed last year. It was passed in the House but did not pass in the Senate. And it's going, you know, in front of the legislature again this year.
Well, who is it that's pushing this legislature?
You know, it's going to be the medical malpractice insurance carriers, of course. It's going to be the doctors. It's going to be the people who are involved as a defendant in these cases. They're going to be lobbying to push the legislation to put a cap on what victims can recover for pain and suffering and the claim as a whole.
So, Tammy, this is a hot button. What do you think? This is going to be a lightning rod in discussions for a lot of people, a lot of mixed opinions.
I think I'm with you on this. I don't know if I would always go to suing a doctor for something. So this is where I have to figure out if this applies to that type of surgery or a mistake or something like that.
I mean, it sounds like there are a lot of things already in place to prevent frivolous cases from going to court.
Yeah, with the affidavit from the doctor to even get the case before the courts, that's
right.
One safeguard. The short statute of limitations is another safeguard. Mm-hmm. You know, I get a lot of calls, probably 5 calls a week, from people who have legitimate malpractice claims, but they are outside the statute of limitations and they are time barred.
And what is that statute again?
It's 2 years. If it's just medical malpractice, if it involves a fatality, then it's 3 years.
Okay. I did have a question about out of state. So let's say I'm traveling and I'm in a different state and something happens and I have to go to emergency care, you know, and get into surgery, and something happens out of state. Can you help me with that, or do I have to have a lawyer from that state, or what?
Well, first of all, you know, to bring a claim in a particular state, you have to have an attorney that's licensed in that state.
Okay.
There are, for example, my firm, Schultz & Myers, we have lawyers licensed in Missouri, Arkansas, and Illinois.
Okay.
So we definitely handle cases in those states. However, if it's a federal case, for example, if you're a citizen of Missouri and you're injured in Indiana and you want to file a lawsuit in Indiana, you can actually I could file that lawsuit for you if it's in federal court, because I can just go ahead and file paperwork to get admitted in federal court for your case.
Okay.
So it's kind of a yes and no answer to that question.
Well, what makes it a federal case?
Quickly, two ways, most commonly, are if the parties are citizens of different states and the matter in controversy exceeds $75,000.
Okay.
So if you, Tammy from Missouri, sue trucking company located in Illinois, that is a federal case.
Okay.
So you can file that in federal court.
Okay, got it.
Okay, so this is a lightning round, and I don't know that I'm going to take a real strong stance on this, because I think the jury's still out with me on it, except that I do think that people need to be well represented, and medical malpractice does go on, and it does happen, and people do deserve settlements. That if you've had somebody that's been wrongfully injured one way or another, be through negligence or through malpractice, then they should be entitled to something.
I think the caps, you can look at it two ways. You know, the common propaganda out there that you read is that if there's no caps on medical malpractice claims, that medical malpractice insurance premiums are going to skyrocket and doctors will leave the state of Missouri because there's no cap to what they can be found liable for.
I've heard that before.
The research and the proof just doesn't support that argument. But ultimately, I think, you know, the Missouri Constitution explicitly allows citizens of this state to go file grievances in a court and get a jury trial of their peers to properly assess the damages. And we have to leave it, in my opinion, up to jurors to decide what your claim's worth.
I guess,
you know, if it's
true.
Worth $50,000, it's worth $50,000. If it's worth $5 million, you have to put some faith and trust in our jurors. And just remember, it's hard to even get your lawsuit even in front of the jury in a medical malpractice situation because of those safeguards that already are in place.
Got it.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Well, and there's a lot of responsibility for doctors, and I definitely have I have some compassion for what they go through, for how difficult their profession is. But when you hear about a doctor operating on the wrong side of a patient, or they bring in the wrong file and they do a complete wrong operation on patients sometimes, that stuff it does go on.
Yeah, you know, it's a very highly regarded profession. They have a lot of responsibility, just as attorneys do, and just as attorneys can be sued for legal malpractice. You know, I think ultimately if somebody does something that deviates from what the normal profession is, otherwise known as negligence, I think, you know, you'd have to be held accountable for that, and your damages are assessed by a jury or peers.
Right. It really becomes about accountability, and there still has to be accountability, and that's what this law protects.
Correct.
Okay, well, if anybody is in that situation, you know, where you've had personally, you've had something happen, or if you've had it happen to a relative, somebody very close to you, reach out right now to Stephen Schultz from Schultz and Myers Law Firm. Talk to an attorney at his firm and have him review your case and see if it is a case. Maybe it's not. You know, they may talk to you and say, you don't really have a case. I'm really sorry that this happened, but you might have a case. And if you do, you need to make sure that you're really well represented. And the best way for them to get in touch with you, if they want to call your office, 314-444-4444.
Pretty easy to remember.
Yep, that's an easy one. So all fours, call in St. Louis. SchultzMyers.com is your website.
Correct.
And I'm going to make sure on DougHaldeman.com we have all your contact information. So, Stephen, thank you very much for taking the time to come in today.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Coming up next, when does no mean no? Well, you better hope that your mortgage lender doesn't take no for an answer right away when they're working on your loan. You're listening to the Doug Haldeman Show on FM News Talk 97.1.
If you're injured in an accident or hurt on the job, who's going to look out for you? The insurance company employs adjusters and lawyers to protect them. You need someone to protect you and your family. Schultz Myers, it's always free to talk with us, and there are no attorney's fees unless we win your case. Call us at 444-4444 or visit our website for a free case evaluation. Schultz Myers, putting you first.